From college to the pros, America's pastime in full force, 24/7 on The Long Ball with Andrew Brown.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and welcome all. You're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I am Andrew Brown, and I am oh so excited to be back at it again. I do apologize for the delay. I recently got another podcast up and running called Hawkeye Baseball Talk. Please check that out as myself and Zach Mackey bring you Hawkeye Baseball each and every week with analysis, interviews, and so much more. Right now, though, this show is The Long Ball, and for those not familiar with it, it's a chance where I get to take you through the world of collegiate and professional baseball with everything that's happening in and around both sports, big topics, and I get to do so with some of the most influential members in the world of baseball, both collegiately and professionally. I've spoken with many different coaches, many different analysts, beat writers, and so forth, and also big-time athletes, and I am very happy to continue to bring that to you now. Again, my apologies for the delay, but I feel that I'll more than make up for it here with this episode, and I think you're going to like it a lot. First, before we dive into it, let me preface what will be coming to you in this episode. Yeah, I'm a big fan of following the journey in sports, and what I mean by that is following the journey of, you know, an athlete from the beginnings all the way to where they are now and where they will be. I'm a big fan of following the history of a franchise, of a team, of a coach, of basically anything in sports. You know, I love the documentary of the foundation of ESPN, when it was founded and where it is now. You know, I'm a big fan of the ESPN 30 for 30 films, huge fan of Ken Burns' baseball documentary, going through all the most influential individuals in the world of baseball history, the most influential stadiums, teams, what have you, anything. It goes through all the great history of baseball, and you know that's what I'm all about. I love that. I think I have close to 10 books dedicated to the history of baseball. I'm literally right now looking at one of my books that says The Baseball Bible, and another that says A Story of Baseball's Most Famous Artifacts. So I love the history of baseball just as much as the New Age analytical thinking. And with that, I think above all else, I love the documentary. I love following a player, an athlete, and you know their humble beginnings to where they are now. You know, because you never know when you're young. You never truly know if you'll make it to the big leagues. And it's always very fascinating to me when I get to watch that and I get to just see how someone has been so successful in an industry that I love so much. You know, I've always wanted to be the guy on the other end, oddly enough, asking the questions, asking and just for the sole purpose of digging into their brain, just to see their journey, folded out, to see all the little hidden facts, the little hidden gems that you may not get from anything else. That's what I've always wanted to ask, that, you know, what is it like? What was your journey like? Recently, I was granted the chance to do just that, to be on the other side and to ask a very influential person about their journey. And I gotta tell you, it was so enlightening for me. It was so much better than I even thought it would be, guys. This individual that I talked with is such an influential part of baseball, knows the game very well, is a savant of the game of baseball, and is really just such an inspirational tale. And you'll be able to tell that right away as we get going with this interview. And I know you're gonna absolutely love it. I initially met this guy through Twitter. You know how when Twitter goes, hey, if you like this, you might also like this. And this individual came up on my Twitter feed. And again, I talk about the motivational aspect. That's initially what caught my eye about him. You know, he brought forth a very motivational, I cannot remember it right now, but it was very impactful at the time. And that's what caught my eye. It was a motivational saying that he put out himself about baseball. And I clicked on it. I ended up following this individual. And before I knew it, I was following almost everything he was saying, everything he was putting out there, from quotes to diagrams and even videos. If you get the chance, by the way, check out this guy's videos, and I'll tell you who he is in just a bit. But I started following this guy so much, and I got to the point where I went, wouldn't this is the kind of guy that I would like to speak with. This is the kind of guy who I would like to pick his brain and talk about his journey. So I mustered up the courage one day to just simply ask him, and to my wonderment, to my amazement, he said yes. He said, I'd love to be on your show, I'd love to talk about baseball. And so about a week after I initially got in contact with him, I started talking with him a little bit more and more. And it was pretty interesting because at the time I just started the Chipper Jones Ball Player Biography book. Great book, gotta check it out if you get the chance. It was very interesting because I started that and I got to thinking, you know, this guy, this man's story, you know, screw the book. It could go straight to Hollywood. That's how impactful it is. That's how amazing it is. Again, he's a motivational guy like any other. He's so inspirational. And I know you're going to love this interview just as much as I did. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let me go ahead and introduce who this individual is. He is a retired pitcher who performed at the major league level and who put forth an 11-year pro career, who is a third-round draft pick and played for the likes of the Indians, Royals, and Pirates. This individual was an All-American, and he is currently the president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report, that's PBR. He is a motivational man among others. He is an inspiring tale with the best of them. He is the one, he is the only, Dan Civette. Thank you very much, Dan, for being on the show. Welcome aboard. You know, your story is one that I have come to absolutely love and I'm always inspired by, and I can't wait for our listeners to be just as inspired as I have been. Your story was so amazing right from the get-go, right from your high school days, and it just kept going on from there. You had a lot surrounding your high school days, a lot of hype, a lot of promise, and certainly a lot going for you. And without kind of ruining the details here, let me just hand it off to you. With the amount of hype, with the amount of notoriety that you were getting while simply in high school, what was that process like for you? What was it like to be getting that attention and to have a more than just a good idea that you may be able to make it at that next level? What was that whole process like for you as just a high school student?
It's actually a school that is in is closed now, so the school doesn't even exist anymore. And, you know, I had a lot of success, obviously. We're, you know, such a small area that we played in all small schools, so I had a lot of talent early and a lot of signs of, you know, having some special talents in the game of baseball. So really, everyone in the area knew that I was pretty good. And as I started getting these national, you know, different awards and things like that, that it really started kind of coming to the surface that there was some big things ahead. And, you know, obviously I was already committed to George Mason. I had a full Division I scholarship to play baseball there, so I was really excited about that path. And you know, my senior year in high school, there's a few pro scouts had actually seen me throw in Florida that previous January, and then, you know, they called the high school, and you know, our high school thought it was such a big deal. I was sitting in the main office with the principal and taking a psychology test or whatever for a different major league team like every other day. And so it was a cool experience for everyone. And I kind of liked that because that's the kind of, you know, person that I am. I kind of like to have everyone involved. So it was an awesome experience. And, you know, they followed me around throughout my, you know, senior year. I think I had like 8 starts because, you know, where I was at, you know, in April in northern Pennsylvania, it's either 28 degrees or it's 45 degrees, but it's not good weather. And, you know, they followed me around, and like my last start of my senior year, I think every major league team was there. I hit 91, which was the hardest I'd thrown the whole year. And I remember I rode home with the Indians, Northeast scout. He was headed back to my house to take one of those tests again. And he just had said, hey, you know, I hope you know that your performance today, you know, is really going to elevate you in this coming draft. So that really was the first time I kind of really knew that I was going to probably get drafted and go on to play pro ball.
Once again, everybody, you are listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I am joined by Dan Civette, former major league pitcher with an 11-year pro career, played for the likes of the Indians, Royals, and Pirates. and he is the current president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. He joins me now talking about his journey and his pathway starting at the high school level. And Dan, I want to kind of piggyback off of what you were talking about with the psychology test. For me, that's really intriguing, and I'm sure it's intriguing for all those listening in, because not a lot of us really associate all of that with the scouting process for Major League Baseball and how it affects high schoolers. Now, I'm sure that that's not the only intriguing aspect that went through the whole process with you. When you take a look back, what was the most intriguing part about this whole process that you remember the most?
Well, I think one of the, I don't know, I mean, it was, there was a really intriguing, cool, cool thing, was I got to go to PNC Park just a couple days actually before the draft and do a pre-draft workout with the Pirates. And when I got there, they kind of pulled me aside and they started like measuring my shoulders and my arm length and my fingers, and something that it was really the first experience. You know, I'm very close to the draft at this point and it hadn't happened yet. So I'm getting all these like interesting measurements and they're talking about stuff. And, you know, I was 6'4", 160 pounds. I look like, you know, I missed several meals growing up. So I was just a really lean, frail, projectable kid. And I think they had me run the 60-yard dash, which, you know, I wasn't that fast. They were trying to find out, you know, what was this kid going to be, you know, if we took him, you know, what was this kid going to be down the road? And it's funny because now I sit in that position now with what I do.
Once again, everybody, Dan Civet, current New York chapter president of Prep Baseball Report. And we're talking about his baseball journey starting at the high school level. And now, Dan, let's go ahead and fast forward just a little bit here as we take a look at the 2002 Major League Baseball draft. That was when you found yourself entering the Major League Baseball scene as you were drafted by the Cleveland Indians. Now, let's just stop there and say that's huge. Whenever you're drafted, whenever you're chosen, especially in the top five rounds of the draft, that's always big. From the 10,000-foot level here, Dan, take us through, what was that like for you? For those who may not be familiar with the process, may not be familiar with being drafted and what comes with it, what was that like for you?
And it's different now because back then, I mean, this is a while ago, 2002 I got drafted, so we're talking a long time ago. They didn't have it on TV like they do now, the draft. It was on the internet. So the teams would pick, and basically I had my whole family and a couple close friends, and I actually had school that day. So I was in school. So I was out, I took the day off of school, and I remember just being so nervous, you know, because you're 18 years old and you have been playing baseball since you were seven and had that dream of going on and you know, being a major leaguer, all those things that hopefully every kid that plays has. And I remember sitting in my bathroom with the lights off on the floor and just so nervous. And the phone rang, and it was a family relative, and we thought it was going to be a team, and like we were like yelling at the guy to get off the phone. And eventually, like, it came into the third round, and the Indians said, they picked a left-hander out of Elkland, Pennsylvania, in the 94th pick, and immediately the scout that I just previously told you that I rode home with after that last start in high school calls me, and he's like, you know, congratulations, and I'll be up in the next few days to try to sign you. So it was a whirlwind, to be honest with you, and it was such a relief to hear my name called. And then the school threw a little party. I ended up going down to the local Little League, and all the Little League teams in the area came. It was pretty surreal coming from such a small area and having that that amount of people that were really looking up to you. But you know, as I soon found out in the next 11-12 years how much of a grind and how tough pro ball was really going to be for me.
Dan Civet, former 11-year pro ball player, joining the show here on The Long Ball. And Dan, you talk about grinding, and certainly as evident by one of your tweets a couple days ago with you doing a one-armed push-up, your work ethic, your grinding has stayed with you to this very day. Before you and I got onto this interview, you talked about all the work that you had to do once you got to the major league level. Obviously, to still have that work ethic now, you not only had to develop it, but I assume that it had to be there at least in a small sense when you were early on in high school. Kind of take me through what that was like in high school, because I assume it's a little different from small town Pennsylvania back in 2002 than it is right now, when you have a lot of different groups, organizations, clinics that athletes can go to better themselves in all parts of the season. What was it like putting in the grind and putting in the work as a high schooler in preparation for the big leagues?
Well, you know, and it's funny because in high school, I didn't understand, right? And no one, there wasn't a training facility on every corner where I grew up. There wasn't a bunch of ex-professional players that could give you the information. So I was completely blind going into pro ball. And to be honest with you, my first couple of years, the level of work and what it was going to take was extremely challenging for me. And I can be honest with myself now and say that first year or two, I would ask myself, hey, is this really what I want to do? You know, I'm away from home. I had never, you know, been away from home. I'm down in North Carolina in the Appalachian League. And, you know, I feel like I'm so far away from the big leagues, you know, at rookie ball, and I'm struggling. You know, they would put me out there to start every fifth day, and it didn't matter what happened, you were going to throw, you know? So I had a lot of ups and downs my first couple of years. And you really had to start just embracing the fact that if you were going to do it, you had to be willing to go 100%, and you had to be willing to put in more than the next guy. And you had to understand there was probably somebody that was still going to work harder than you. So you had to get pretty focused on the grind. And, you know, that's something that we hear now all the time. Everyone talks about the grind and what does that mean? And, you know, I've heard people say, oh, you play professional baseball, so there's no way that's a grind. And I'm like, listen, it's something that, you know, so grateful that the opportunity was there and humbled, you know, to share the field with so many rising stars over an 11-year career. But wow, is it a grind? I mean, every day you're at the field from 12 until 11, you're practicing, you lift weights before that, and you're never in a good routine where you can eat at a certain time every day and get accustomed to that. You're always on a bus, or you're traveling, you're home for four, or you're on the road for six, and you're living out of a suitcase for 5 months. So, you know, and I'm not complaining. I'm just trying to like make sure people understand, like, when you get into pro ball, minor league baseball is an absolute, it's just an absolute grind, because, you know, it's really survival of the fittest, you know? So when I dealt with a lot of injuries, and we'll get to it in a second, but like when I fast forward to my first time getting out of pro ball, and really just the work ethic that I had learned from the game, you know, it really was able to kind of put me in a great position to be successful now.
Former third round pick, 94th overall pick back in the 2002 draft, pitcher Dan Civette joining me here on the Long Ball Show. Dan, I want to take a break in the action just quickly and bring forth a question that's kind of been on my mind for quite some time. In a world where you have a lot of controversy surrounding whether you go play collegiate ball or whether you go straight to the professional ranks, I mean, for example, college basketball, the talk about eliminating the one and done, going straight to the professional ranks. Baseball already has been doing that and forever will be doing that. You yourself, Dan, were at one point in your career collegiate bound. So I feel that you're uniquely qualified to kind of answer this from both sides of the coin here. In terms of the argument as to whether a prospect in baseball goes straight either to the collegiate level or the professional ranks, where do you stand on that? Or do you have much of a stance at all as for what's the best route for somebody to take?
Well, you know, I looked at it at my time that it was about, you know, the opportunity to get into pro ball right away and develop with the instructors and pitching coaches and all those people at that professional level and the resources that they have. And as a pitcher, you know, I was a Northeast pitcher. I was pretty raw. I didn't have a lot of miles on my arm at the time just because of the weather. You know, you only can play so much in the Northeast. So, you know, I think the argument is can be shifted a lot on what position you are and, you know, what school you're going to. Like if you're a, you know, you're a middle infielder and you're going to Florida, University of Florida, you know, it's going to be tougher to get that high school kid to leave, you know, the scholarship opportunity unless he's drafted, you know, in a round that makes sense. So I think it happens all the time now where kids hold out or they, you know, they price themselves out. They want this much X amount of, you know, dollars to play, or they're going to go and try their luck in college. But for me, because I was a pitcher, I wanted to get right into, you know, the pro experience. And, you know, with injuries, you know, you just never know. Like, you know, you could get injured your second year in college, and now your opportunity to play pro ball might actually be over. So for me, it's all about the situations, you know, for each kid specifically and what, you know, their families are going through. And, you know, it's hard to really make a blanket statement on it because I think everyone's situation is just a little bit different.
You know, Dan, even from the short time that I have known you, you have been a very inspirational piece. You know, it's really refreshing to go straight to your Twitter profile and see all the great motivational quotes, all the great motivational videos and inspiring pieces that you put out there. When you look back at your time early on in the minor league ranks, I assume that there had to have been a few individuals that helped to inspire and motivate you. Who are the cast of characters that you remember the most that kind of stood out to you from a motivational, from an inspirational, and even a kind of a comedic standpoint?
You know, I played with so many guys that are probably now either in the big leagues or have some time in the big leagues. My second year in pro ball, a fresh young kid out of Maryland, Cumberland, Maryland, was drafted by the Cleveland Indians, and we had the same scout that, you know, in that Northeast area that the scout had covered Maryland as well. So the scout called me and said, "Hey, I got this kid coming down and I kind of want you to put him under your wing." And, you know, I was like, "Absolutely, sure." So he gets down my second year. His name's Aaron and Laffey. Well, Laffey has about 6 years in the big leagues. He's 60. He just retired last year after a 16-year career. Phenomenal person. Just a great overall friend. We shared a lot of great laughs and experiences over the we roomed together for around, I think, 6 years straight. So that's probably the most impactful person. Playing against some guys, like, I remember Jeff Francoeur hit a ball off me that probably went 500 feet, and it taught me, I threw two fastballs by him. The third one I wasn't going to get by him. And I learned, it was something, it was a learning experience. I remember that as like it was yesterday. I remember being in high A playing against Hunter Pence, and we went out that night after, and we were all talking, and, you know, he was sharing some things that he saw. They were trying to pick pitches when I was pitching against them. And just, you know, I think a lot of people think there's a lot of competition between the teams and the minor leagues and the players, but it's a real small fraternity. You know, it's a brotherhood, and we tried to help each other. And, you know, obviously we cared about our careers more, you know, obviously that they were the most important, but we always tried to help and be good teammates and, you know, against our opponents and all those things. So I just had a blast playing against all these people. And then, you know, in 2009, I was with the Royals in AA, and so many guys in that league almost the entire Royals team went to the big leagues that next year. They won the World Series. So I had, you know, Greg Holland was on the team as a closer, and we got to hang out in the bullpen the whole year. There's just a lot of you know, you think back, and we could talk for 3-4 hours about how many guys that I played with that made big impacts on me. But yeah, those are just some quick, you know, things that I remember playing.
You're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I'm joined by Dan Civette, who posted an 11-year pro career playing with the likes of the Cleveland Indians, Kansas City Royals, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he is currently the president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. He joins me talking about his journey because, once again, ladies and gentlemen, I love the journey, and this journey that we're talking about now is as inspirational as they come. Now, Dan, you mentioned a little bit there about Hunter Pence. He's the kind of guy that throughout his career has kind of seemed like the most comedic individual on a ball field that you'll ever see or ever be associated with. From your time within the minor league and major league ranks, who is that kind of a person for you? Who stood out to you as the comic that you most remember in your playing days?
There was a guy in Double A. His name was Anthony LaRue. I don't know if that name rings a bell. He's a pitcher. He would just always do pranks on the coaches or do stuff to the players, and he had your back, but he was always constantly trying to mess with you. And he was a little bit older. Yeah, I think he actually had a little bit of big league time with the Braves. So he had a lot of fun during the season and was pretty crazy. So he was probably the biggest prankster that I played with.
Joined here on the Long Ball with the one and only 11-year baseball professional named Dan Savette, former Cleveland Indian, former Pittsburgh Pirate, former Kansas City Royal, and now the current president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. We've been talking about his high school days and his days in the minor league ranks and some funny times. But right now, Dan, on a more serious note here, injuries will always happen within any sport. It's just a natural occurrence that will happen. Hopefully not to everybody. You hope it never happens to you. But I feel like in today's age, even with the technology, there's always that fear once you get injured that you may never make it back. And that's, there's always a chance that you may never make it back to where you were. But everyone's so injured. And once somebody gets injured, there's always that doubt. It seems like there's so much more doubt now that that person will come back and be as effective as he was before. But this is where your story really helps to clean up the narrative a little bit, Dan. Because you went through a multitude of injuries, yet you came out on the other side just as good, if not better, than you were beforehand. Take the listeners through what that process was like for you and really how you fared coming out on the other side of your injuries.
Well, my first injury would have been, I think in 2004 or 5, I had a ground ball back up the middle, and it was like a changeup. He was out in front, and he kind of like put some crazy spin on the ball, and it chopped back up the middle. And instead of leaving it to the second baseman, I kind of reached my hand out, and the ball hit the tip of my thumb and actually broke my my knuckle. So I had to have 6 weeks of nothing. I couldn't throw, and it was on my throwing hand. So that derailed me. And what that really did was it gave me 6 weeks of working probably harder than I've ever worked in my life, especially in my young career at that point. I remember taking my squats to close to 400 pounds. I remember doing some runs that I'd never done before. And so basically I did everything I could that 6 weeks to get myself as physically strong as I could. So when I started throwing, that I could try to gain back that lost time. And I ended up having, when I came back, I ended up having the start of a 2 or 3 year run where I had a phenomenal 2 or 3 year run in pro ball where I was every outing, I was going 5 to 7 innings with, less than 2 runs a game, striking out over I think it was 1.5 per inning. I just had a lot of success. I was throwing a little bit harder. I kind of, just really was starting to evolve as a pitcher. And a shame, at the end of 2005, my shoulder started bothering me a little bit, and I ended up having a shoulder injury, and that kind of derailed me as well. But I was able to continue to always fight and battle, and I came back from the shoulder injury and actually threw harder than I ever have in pro ball when I came back from the shoulder injury, and then continued to play and grind. And I think a lot of people forget how quick it is to get into pro ball and to get out of pro ball. I think the average player is maybe 2 seasons, and I feel very fortunate that I was able to grind it out for 11 years. So it's a wonderful game, and it's taught me so much about myself. So it's really been a blessing.
You know, Dan, It's very interesting to me because when I look at you and when many people look at you, they find a lot of motivation, a lot of inspiration in what you say and what you put out there and what you do. And you talk about the lessons that you have learned. And again, a lot of people learn things from you. So it's a very interesting circle of life to look through, especially with that scope of a lens. I'm sure that there are a lot of lessons that you learned that are still impactful for you this very day and that you pass on to the younger generation as well. What are some of those lessons either learned from players, coaches, GMs, or so forth that you still hold with you to this very day?
Well, I think that it sounds cliche, but I mean, you learn in pro ball to be on time. You know, you learn to have a goal and be committed to it, and you learn that your appearance matters. So how you look, you know, how you feel, how you take care of yourself, like those things all matter. They reflect, it's what people see, and I took a lot of pride in all those things. I feel like I was so committed to being a better player. I'm so driven and you know, trying to always think about my hometown and where I was from and you know, was I going to be able to make it? And I just remember, like, learning the phrase respect the game when I stepped into pro ball. Like, my first manager ever in pro ball, his name was Ruglis Ador. He's an awesome Venezuelan. I think he was a hitting instructor, but he was the manager for that team at the time, and he was big on respect the game of baseball. And what that does is it just teaches you about how every little thing matters. And then when you get, obviously you get in the real world and you're out of the game, and you have to then do the same sort of things. You have to take every little thing serious. You have to work harder than the next person if you want to be successful. And those are kind of the things that it's really done for me. It's just taught me to be crazy about my work, crazy about you know, being successful, passionate about stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of people could learn from those sort of things. So I try to motivate now. That's really my goal, is to motivate people. And unbelievable, you know, it's unbelievable things happen. And I don't think a lot of people get to share their stories. So I'm fired up that I get to share mine with you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I am joined by Dan Savette, former 11-year Major League Baseball professional and current president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. Dan, certainly this is a story of yours that just has me on edge every single time I go over it. And for those of you waiting for the biggest inspirational piece, this is it right here. Because we'll fast forward, Dan, into the future, past some really good years for you on the baseball diamond at the professional level with a lot of success. And we get to the chapter in your journey where you're no longer associated with the game. In fact, you and I talked about it, that you went from the professional baseball ranks to the oil fields. So basically, you trade what was the pinnacle of all ball players to make the major leagues, and you swap that for an oil field job. And now this is just the path that ended up happening for Dan, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't something that he necessarily chose, but this is a path that he went through. This is also at the point in which you should really listen up closely, because this will be the start of the most inspirational story you'll ever find. Just because Dan was out of baseball, this was not the end of baseball for him. Now, I don't mean like becoming a fan of baseball once again or somehow becoming an assistant at a high school level. No, no, no. Dan was not done being a professional pitcher. He was not done being a professional ball player. Let's just think about that for a second. He's out of the game of baseball into the oil fields. Not necessarily something that screams comeback. And he didn't just get in there. He had successful years after his comeback. Mind-blowing. So, Dan, before we get into that specifically, first off, how in the world did you go from professional ball player to oil field worker? What was that journey like, and how in the world did you manage to get back into the game of professional baseball?
Well, you know, so for about a year and a half before I went to the oil field, I just got out of pro ball, and I actually was a Division I recruiting coordinator at Niagara University. I did that for a whole season. And then I went right to Corning Community College and was the head coach there. So I really wanted to stay in the coaching, but at Corning Community College, it was a really, really part-time job, almost just a stipend for the spring. So what I did was I ended up, there was a big factory in where I was living that basically was, I think it was Sikorsky, and they like designed helicopters, Blackhawk helicopters. And I ended up working a night shift there, getting the blueprints ready for the engineers on different types of aircrafts they'd be working on the next morning. And I worked overnight doing that. And then I would either go home and sleep until practice, or I would, if I had games that day, I'd have to go from work to the field and get ready. So I did that, but as that sounded, it was terrible. So it didn't last. It couldn't last very long. So only for one season it lasted. And then I before I got to the oil field, I independent ball. I went back and tried that for a summer. And I think that was in 2011. I went and did that. And, I had a lot of fun because independent ball was so much different than affiliated baseball. It was just a really good experience and another kind of, feather in the cap to kind of lean back on when, later in life. So, but what happened was there was a big boom in the oil field in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. And I had a buddy who actually coached with me at Corning. And he was now working in the oil field. And he said, Dan, just come do it. Like, it's going to be good money. And, it's a total different grind and you'll enjoy it. So basically I took a leap and just jumped into it. And, it was awesome to learn a new trade. I mean, we were working on average 84 hours a week. We traveled all over. And I remember, I started in like January, and I was, they had me as like the fresh, I don't even remember what they called you, but you were just like the fresh greenhorn. And I was hanging from like a wellhead 16 feet in the air, like with, the safety stuff on, and it's like, 20 degrees out, and you're swinging sledgehammers, tightening up bolts and stuff that are on the well. And I just remember thinking, wow, like, 4 or 5 months ago, I was like playing professional baseball. Right now I'm hanging, 20 feet in the air. And it was just a crazy thing, but I really kind of embraced it. And I said, I'm going to try to be the best worker in the oil field. I'm going to try to learn everything I can about, the natural gas and the oil field stuff. So I basically started studying books and learning about the different, things that could happen on the sites, and, learned about the water, pressure and different things when you're dealing with the wells. And basically I learned everyone's job. I worked hard and I was able to move up pretty quick. So within like 3 months, I was like basically the operator of the whole unit. And we traveled all over, one job. We worked the whole entire week. I put that in a tweet, and I don't think people believe me, but we literally worked 168 hours. We did sleep obviously once in a while, but you had to do it rotating, and it obviously wasn't safe, and I don't think any labor laws were probably kept. So it was pretty crazy, but we basically just you work nonstop, and you could make a lot of money, and it was obviously, that was something that was a driving force, but it was also the fact that you're able to learn a new trade. And I got a crane license out of the deal. I had a CDL out of the deal. So I was, able to drive huge trucks and operate crazy machinery. So, I think back, it's funny. Like I really believe I was able to do that and accomplish that because of, playing pro baseball. And then it goes from, my supervisor just joking about, you should go try and play again, to me being out in the middle of, a well pad, throwing rocks into the woods, trying to get my arm ready for a pro trial. So it was pretty crazy.
Well, Dan, if it hadn't been already, this is definitely the point at which movies are made. I got to say, this has been quite the ride, but you get back into it. Kind of a two-part question here, Dan. First off, what was the journey like going from ball player to oil field worker? And then once you were in the oil fields, what was that environment like, you know, comparatively to the ball fields? And then the second part of that question, obviously, we know that you right now end up back in the major league level. There's got to be a start to everything. What was the start? What was the brewings like that started the whole process back to you making it into the major leagues?
Well, so I'm in, you know, almost a year, a full year. I think it was like at that point, maybe a year. It's actually a year and like 5 months at that time. So it was almost the spring. We're in Ohio working, and my supervisor was joking with a couple guys, like, hey, this guy used to play pro ball, but, you know, yeah, I don't know if he still has it. So we were just, it was all kind of a joke. And so I basically started throwing rocks from like the well pad. Like I'd get like a huge 5 gallon bucket full, and I'd throw them into the woods. And what I did was I would do it on breaks, because obviously there's a lot of stuff going on during the, you know, while you're working the shift. So I would do it during breaks. And I had no one to obviously play catch with, so that, you know, throwing a baseball and stuff wasn't going to really happen. So this is how I got my arm ready. And I was able to find it was just like an open tryout. And it was in like down by Allentown, Pennsylvania. It was supposed to be at the AAA park there. And I knew the Major League Scouting Bureau guy that was hosting it. So I got his number. I was able to talk to him and tell him, hey, you know, I haven't played in a little bit. I've been in the oil field working, but, you know, I'm stronger. I've been doing a lot of things, and I want to give it one more shot. Can I at least come to this tryout? Is that cool? He's like, yeah. So basically my supervisor said, hey, listen, when the tryout comes up, take one of the work trucks. I'm not even going to tell anyone else. Just go drive the 6 hours from Ohio to Allentown, Pennsylvania. You know, we'll take care of it there and then get back here after. So, you know, long story short, I did that. I'm like an hour away from the tryout, and the guy calls me and he says, hey, Dan, it's been raining here. And I could tell like the weather wasn't that good. He says, it's been raining here. We're not going to be able to get on the AAA field. And so we're just going to bang it, and we're going to move it to next week. And I said, well, listen, that does not work for my situation at all. So is there anything I can do? So he says, let me give you a call back. He finds like a Legion ball catcher in the local area, and then we have to go to like a town park field. And there was a just a side bullpen mound that was covered. So it wasn't like, you know, it was still okay. It was dry. So we get there, and it's like kind of misting. It's the rain's kind of subsided, but it's still a little bit damp. I start playing catch. I get loose. You know, I feel pretty good. I'm pretty jacked up, and I'm pretty excited for this opportunity. And it's only one scout now. It's just him. And I get up on the bullpen mound, and I start throwing, and I feel great. And, you know, it's like, wow, I haven't done this in a while, but it felt like I was right back on, you know, back in the game. And I saw him put the gun down. And so, you know, you're thinking so many things at that point, and I throw some more. Now I see him put it back up, and, you know, I threw a couple of curveballs that were terrible. And, you know, it's hard to throw a breaking pitch when you haven't thrown and you've been throwing rocks for like literally 6 weeks. So you have no feel for a breaking ball. So my breaking ball was terrible, and I threw a few changeups. That was always kind of my best pitch. So that still had, you know, it looked all right, but it wasn't great. And I'm like, man, this is not good. This is, you know, I'm starting to look pretty bad. And he's like, just throw, you know, two more. So I threw two more, and he just kind of came up. It was really quick. I mean, I was like, man, I drove this far, and it lasted like, you know, 4 minutes. And he comes up, and he's like, Dan, what were you throwing, you know, when you ended in pro ball, like your last year? I was like, you know, I got it up to like 92 a few times, but I was like an 88, 91, 92 guy, you know. I said, yeah, that's about right. And he said, okay. He's like, well, you didn't throw a fastball under 94 today, and you hit 97 five times. And I was like, 97? He's like, 97. I'm like, oh my Lord. So really, it was like that movie that they did, The Rookie. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I start driving back, and right in the middle of the drive back, I say, I'm done in the oil field. I'm just going straight back home, and I'm leaving the truck at the main place, and I'm going to try to pursue this. And no joke, on the ride home, I had four offers to go play, and I ended up, you know, picking the Pirates. and going on and playing in Double A with Pirates that whole year. And then I went on and played in winter ball after that. And, you know, long story short, I get to where I'm at now at the Prep Baseball Report, which I didn't know anything about.
You're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown, speaking with Dan Savette, former third-round draft pick and 11-year Major League Baseball professional with one heck of a story to boot. So, Dan, let's continue on with this great journey of yours because, well, we can't stop now. You know, you have more successful years as a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates. You have more time as a Major League pitcher. And then there comes a point at which you decide, hey, enough's enough. I'm going to end it for good. And you make it into the position you're currently in as the president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. You know, kind of dive in for us. What was the transition like for you? How did you manage to make it into this position? And what has really been your main goal while being here? What are you striving for each and every day as a member of Prep Baseball Report?
Was looking for someone to, you know, kind of be the takeover New York, or really start it in New York because it wasn't even there. And, you know, basically I was kind of at that point just saying, you know, I'm in Puerto Rico right now playing winter ball. And, you know, how old am I? I'm 30 years old. So maybe it's time to take an opportunity that might be something a little bit more steady and not as crazy. So, yeah, long story short, I got here and I've been running New York. It's, you know, like a franchise sort of thing. So I was able to do that. And I love the organization. They've grown from 16 states now to 42 states since I've been involved. And it's just a really, really awesome profession to be in, where we're running events for younger kids and trying to help them get to that next level. And I love being able to share parts of my story because I'm dealing with kids that, you know, they're coming to one of my events in New York and they want to go play college baseball, and they kind of know a little bit about me. And so they're kind of in awe when they hear me talk about it. So, you know, my whole goal in life now is to motivate these kids and try to help them, you know, get the most out of their true potential. And right now, as you said about the Twitter, like, you know, I'm pretty active on the Twitter, and I like to give a lot of advice on pitching or baseball in general, and especially the strength side of things, because I think a lot of kids could get themselves in a lot better positions just by working, you know, in the gym a little bit harder. It's, you know, they say knowledge is power, and I try to give as much knowledge that I was given from people in the game to try to now share it to all these kids, because everyone wants a chance. Everyone wants an opportunity. And so I just hope that I'm able to help these kids in some way, shape, or form get a little bit more of an opportunity.
Well, Dan, as just a baseball fan, a fan of the sport, thank you very much for what you're doing, because you're bettering the sport by helping bettering the athletes of tomorrow. Just a great thing overall. Thank you very much for doing that. I want to now take a look a little deeper into Prep Baseball Report. You know, it definitely has been a Midwest thing, and so I have heard about this for quite some time. And it is something that I've felt the impact of this organization, because I've seen friends, I've seen other teammates enter into this organization and really reap the benefits of what it can bring. It's such a very impactful organization, and it's very intriguing because they bring in such an impactful person like yourself. And so ultimately, this organization does a lot for these kids that maybe they wouldn't have the same opportunities elsewhere. From your vantage point here, Dan, take me through what the premise is of Prep Baseball Report, really the inner workings, and really the growth of this organization from when you've got there to where it is now.
Well, you know, so it's basically a independent scouting company. And, you know, we basically hold showcases in the states that we cover. I obviously only do New York, but we run these events and we scout the kids. The whole idea behind it was really great for me, because it was something that where I was able to be involved in the game still and help kids, which is something that I have a lot of passion for, and build my own business and really take it to whatever level I want to take it to. So that's really what we've done here, and now we've grown in New York to where, you know, we have three full-time guys, we have several part-time guys. We scout the entire state. We run events all over New York. We're able to provide a lot of information to college coaches. We're allowed to provide a lot of information to the player. You know, so the player can gets feedback, and he's able to learn from his experiences with us. So it was just been, you know, it's been wild. And, you know, like I said, it started, it was only 16 states when I got in. It was still really a Midwest thing. But it's evolved because of the people that are at the top. I mean, the national office is a great, it's a great set of people that are all, you know, working towards that same goal of expansion and, you know, taking control of the entire amateur baseball scene. And it's, since I got in, that's all they've done is work towards that goal. And now it's 42 or 43 states. It's great people from every state. Like we just got back from Chicago, and, you know, we were with every state director, or like for me, I'm an owner of New York, and I actually have a state director that is, it works for me. And we, you know, we just got to get together and hang out with everyone and learn everyone, because everyone has a story. You know, like mine seems unique, and I know, and I, you know, like I said, I appreciate you having me on here, but everybody has a story. So although mine seems really unique, like, you know, maybe the next guy has something that I think is really unique. And that's, I learn that way. I like to be a sponge. I like to ask a lot of questions and soak in a lot of information. So I've learned so much over the past couple of years of doing this, and able to stay in the game, able to help kids. I mean, I don't know. I can't think of a better profession than I'm in right now. If it wasn't being in the big leagues, I'd be doing this, and that's why I'm doing this.
Once again, everybody, you've been listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown, speaking with 11-year baseball professional pitcher, the one and only Dan Civette, talking about his great journey, his great path through baseball, and all the motivational and inspiring aspects that come with it. Before we go any further, Dan, you and I talked a little bit about some of the things that you learned or took away as your time as a major league ball player, and really your rise to such as well. I want to translate all of that to the technical side of things, because so many times I've seen from you, especially on the social media accounts, all the different helpful hints and tips that you provide on a technical basis, you know, and it doesn't have to be from the pitching side of things. It can be from pitching. It can be from just simply maintenance, warming up, working out, staying stretched out, you know, just athletic tips and helpful hints. All kinds of things that you put out there that will help these younger guys get a step up, really help them out a lot further along than they would have had without it. So when you look back into your playing days, and of course that is a minor leaguer as well, what were some of the biggest technical hints and tips that you took away that you're now instilling upon the younger generation?
I think it all really will come back to just the amount of commitment. You know, the amount of commitment that you're willing to give towards whatever goal you're going for, you know, and, you know, for me, it was when I was playing pro ball, it was learning how to attack hitters. And how committed was I to that? Was I willing to stay an hour later at the field and look at the spray charts for, you know, the next three teams we're going to face and try to learn each hitter? Was I willing to do that? Or would I just go out there and say, hey, I'm going to just throw and see what happens? Was I willing to stay with the catchers longer and talk to them and what are they seeing? You know, so when it always comes back to, are you committed? And I think everybody needs to look themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, how committed am I really at what I'm doing? And that's kind of what I try to deliver, you know, on Twitter. That's what I try to deliver when I talk to these kids at all these events. I talk to every kid in a group setting, and you know, I want to be a platform for these kids to, you know, really go on and try to get to these next levels in life. And listen, baseball is not everything. It's not. It was able to teach me so many great things about you know, being a man and working hard and just, you know, being a good teammate, and those things help you in life. So baseball is eventually going to end. It ends for everyone. It's going to be, it's always going to be there, and there's always going to be people coming and going throughout the game. So you have to be able to separate those things and learn, hey, if I'm going to play the game, I want to get everything I can out of it, and that includes every life lesson that the game is there to teach. And for me, I just really accepted that. I wanted more from the game. I wanted to continue to learn, and you know, it just all comes back to the commitment. I feel like the reason I'm successful today is because of just how committed I am to what I'm doing, and I don't rest. You know, I don't stop. I continue to go because I know if I stop, someone else is going to try to take my spot. So it just won't happen. I'll never rest.
You're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown, speaking with a one and only friend and great baseball mind, Dan Civette, former 11-year baseball player at the major league level and current president of the New York chapter of Prep Baseball Report. Dan, you've been an inspirational tale, and you know a lot of it comes from the positivity that you had, really the go-get'em attitude, and I think that, really, ultimately, that's what makes the world go round, and I think we need a whole lot more like you. Again, you've been such a positive, inspirational tale, and I think a lot of it comes from the mental mindset that you put out there. And you talk so much about, you know, just grinding through it, getting through it, doing your best, striving for better. And I think your positive mental mindset really shows out there. Kind of take us through really how that has impacted your career and the benefits for the younger kids of continually putting that positive mental mindset out there.
Well, you know, and it wasn't always like that. My first couple of years in pro ball, I doubted myself, and I had a lot of struggles with that. So I think that's common. I think when you're playing a game that involves a lot of failing, you know, like a really good hitter fails 7 out of 10 times, you know, a really good pitcher in the big leagues gives up 3 or 4 runs every 9 innings. I mean, when you're looking at those type of things, it's easy to have a lot of self-doubt or question or worry, a lot of anxiety. That just comes with the territory. So I was able to get with some really great sports psychologists early in my career and learn about, you know, keeping the mind in the moment. I say that a lot now. It's when you're on the mound, and for me, it was when I was competing, learning that right now matters. Not what happened last week, not what's going to happen 5 days from now. What is going to happen right now is the only thing I have control over. And being able to compete that way, and then not only have the mind in the moment, but then have conviction about every pitch that I threw. So if the catcher really wanted that outside fastball and I shook him off and he gave it to me again and I knew that that's what he wanted, for me to change the mindset of I am going to throw this pitch on the outside part of the plate with conviction. I believe that this pitch is going to have success. And I think earlier in my career, I would doubt that. Like, you know, why is he, I don't want that pitch. I'm going to throw a pitch I don't want to throw and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of young hitters do that. And a lot of times they rely just on what the coach is calling at the, you know, hey, it's throw a curveball with 2 strikes. Well, you know, just because it's a curveball and then there's 2 strikes, it doesn't mean that that's the right pitch to throw. There's a lot of different things that obviously take place to determine what's the right pitch. So it's about the conviction. So yeah, that's really the biggest thing that I can take away from all of it is, you know, once I developed that belief in myself and the conviction behind everything that I did when I hit the mound and the confidence that it gives you, it's a real, real powerful thing.
Well, there's no doubt how powerful it is. And, you know, just that mindset that you and other successful members in baseball have had is just undeniable. And, you know, it kind of brings up another question that actually I've been wanting to ask you for quite some time. You know, with your mindset, with your work ethic and everything you've gone through, I think this is perfectly suited for you. But we've seen Jack Morris recently enter Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And he'll be doing so with the highest ERA of anybody that ever was or ever will be in the Hall of Fame as a pitcher. Now, he brought up something, and again, this I think really links every successful ball player together is the mindset. You know, he talked about in his mindset that, hey, it's more about the overall picture. It's more about the team winning. And he stated that, you know, if I give up 5 runs, that's okay. As long as my team has 6 runs, I can give up those 5 runs and know I still have a win for my team. You know, in today's world of, you know, padding individual numbers, it's actually kind of refreshing. And I think that turned a lot of heads. And that's why I wanted to bring this up to you, because it's basically a bigger picture type scenario. And I think that's what links a lot of successful ballplayers together. And for those who want to be successful, that should be about the mindset that they take.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, one of the greatest things I learned as a pitcher was how to handle damage control. Because you're going to get beat, right? That's you have to understand that you are going to go out there and you're going to feel great. You're going to throw a pitch on the outside part of the plate on the black, and they're going to drive it over the right field fence, and you're going to have to tip your cap. And you know, there's going to be times that you just go out there and everything is terrible, and you walk the house and you give up 6 runs in one inning. Trust me, I've been in every scenario there is as a pitcher. So It's all about learning how to control those moments, because you know you can either give up 12 runs or you can give up 4 or 5 and keep your team in the game, and you can last a few more innings so the bullpen doesn't get drained early. And I think that's when you're talking about him, that's exactly why he was so successful as a pitcher, and that's why there's guys that have great numbers, and there's guys that can eat innings, and you know, there's more durable guys than others. And I think that's kind of what you're referring to, is there's a lot of different guys that make it to the the highest level of the game. And it's the makeup behind a player is so unique, and what drives them and how their mind works. And like I said, it took me so long to develop that mindset and that belief that I was that I was good enough to go out there and compete with the best hitters in the country and do it continually and do it consistently. But it takes a lot, and it drains you, and it's a mental, physical grind, and the strongest survive. And you know, God bless the guys that play for 15 to 20 years and make a really great living for themselves, because it is a extremely hard game to play successfully for a long time.
Wrapping up my conversation with Dan Civette, former 11-year baseball pro at the major league level and current president of the New York chapter for Prep Baseball Report. Dan, a lot of times I catch your stuff via Twitter. I mean, you have great motivational quotes, you have great ideas, great tips, great videos. I love everything you put out there. I just can't get enough of it. And I know there are a lot of other people that feel the same way. Kind of take us through what Twitter has been like for you, how much Twitter has meant in terms of getting your message out there.
You know, like we're talking about Twitter, and I use that now personally, you know, as a platform to, you know, try to inspire, try to motivate young kids. And I sometimes get questions about different things, and I love sharing my thoughts. And you know, I think sometimes some of the stuff gets taken the wrong way, or that I'm, you know, maybe a know-it-all, and that's not the case. You know, I love trying to help, and I have a lot of great interactions with people on social media, and it's a great tool. You know, it's a great tool to reach a lot of people. And you know, I'm just trying. Like I threw a couple. I don't know if you even seen it, but I threw a couple weeks ago, because I lift really hard now. I'm very dedicated to working out, and I had someone send me a message that said, "Hey, you're giving the wrong message to these young kids. They shouldn't be lifting, and you know you couldn't throw still. So why are you telling these kids to lift and work hard?" And I'm like, all right, well that sounds like a challenge. So I took like 3 weeks and threw here in upstate New York, and didn't even have a catcher. I just started throwing to a net here at one of these facilities locally, and you know, then I posted it on Twitter, and it's on the top of my timeline right now, and I hit 91, and I haven't thrown in 5 years. So I think the working out is definitely helped me be able to continue to be able to have the arm speed and to compete. And it's just something I believe in, and no one's going to tell me different. Like if you work hard and you're willing to get after it in the weight room, and you're willing to work on your flexibility and all that kind of stuff, you know, you can get better without having to spend crazy amounts of dollars on every other, you know, program there is out there. And you know, I'm just a big believer in how hard you can work, and you know, how hard you should work, to get you to the place that you want to be versus, you know, trying to find shortcuts.
Once again, everybody, you've been listening to my conversation with the one and only Dan Civette. Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Man, your journey is such an inspirational tale. It's just something to behold, and I think everyone should definitely take a page out of your playbook. I know I can't wait for the book to come out, and I definitely can't wait for the movie to come out. Thank you so very much for joining the show and stopping by.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me, and I look forward to doing this again sometime.
You know what, Dan? I can't wait for it. You know, I had such a great time following your journey throughout baseball. I cannot wait for many more conversations to come. There he goes, everybody. Dan Civette. Please check him out on Twitter, at Dan Civette. Follow him and just see everything that he has to offer. He has great tips, great helpful hints, especially if you're in the world of baseball. If you're a high schooler in New York, you got to check out Prep Baseball Report. Check out Dan Civette. You'll be glad you did. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, before I officially bid you adieu, I'll give you a preview into what's to come next week, a very exciting episode as we talk about the NCAA's decision not to extend a third assistant to collegiate baseball and softball, the impacts, and more. I'll do so with a number of different beat writers for college baseball, as well as some players themselves, and really the impact and their thoughts on it. That's coming up next week. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for listening in, and thanks so very much for sharing this podcast and making this a part of your day. Note that this will be up on the show's official Twitter page, at The Long Ball One, as well as my official Twitter page as well. Check both of those out. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in.